From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall at cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 297 of Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and we're broadcasting live from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa, and taking your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, and 1-800-580-2372. If you're calling outside of the 613 or the local 819 calling area, I urge you to call in early. The reason is that, as always, we tend to pile up with calls towards the end of the show, and as a result, many times I'm not able to get to your call, and I'd like to be able to answer all your calls as they come in. 1-800-580-2372 is the outside number. 521-TALK, 521-8255 is the number to call. There was a story on CTV.ca out of Barcelona, Spain earlier this week, and the headline was, "One-third of breast cancer cases are avoidable." And I discussed this with Steve Madeley on Friday, and we could only briefly touch upon this because of time constraints. And the bottom line to this particular story was, at the European Breast Cancer Conference in Barcelona, is that while better treatments, early diagnosis, and mammogram screenings have dramatically slowed the disease, experts are saying that the focus should be upon changing behaviors like diet and exercise. And when you actually look at the number of cases of breast cancer that can be prevented by diet and exercise, and I'm going to get into some of the statistics of this and where this information comes from, breast cancer rates or development of breast cancer can be reduced by one third. Now imagine, if you will, if all the research that came out and they finally said, ladies and gentlemen, we have a pill that you can take that will reduce your rate of breast cancer by one third during your lifetime. That would be a major, major development. And this would be news all over the place. But that doesn't exist. In fact, what we do have is we have evidence that if you alter your diet and exercise regularly, if you can every day, and by exercise it can be going for a walk for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever, just moving around, that will make a huge difference. Now, where does this come from? Well, this simply bolsters this particular study, which came from the International Agency for Research on Cancer, and estimated that 25 to 30% of breast cancer cases could be avoided if women were thinner and exercised more. And again, this is not a matter of blaming people if they are overweight or if they're not exercising. For the same reason, when people smoked in the past, they were unaware of information that linked smoking with lung cancer and hence didn't have the impetus to make the changes necessary to prevent the disease. The same mode of thinking applies today, where we've had this insidious, creeping infiltration of our food supply with foods that are not healthy for us, calorie-dense foods, more consumption, less exercise, more automation in our lives. And as a result, we've seen these type of diseases, not just breast cancer, but other cancers and heart disease and diabetes and osteoarthritis and kidney disease, and on it goes. In a book that I've interviewed the author, Dr. Richard Béliveau, called Eating Well, Living Well, there is a dramatic chart, a bar graph, that shows breast cancers by region of the world and also prostate cancer. I'm going to include both of these to give an illustration of what differences there are in the world. In North America, the lifetime rate for breast cancer, and this is taken from the studies, it's called the 2007 report of the Fonds Mondial de Recherche Contre le Cancer, 500,000 studies evaluated, 5 years of work evaluating 17 types of cancer, and 10 recommendations made by 21 renowned specialists together with 234 oncologists and scientists looking for commonalities that link specific either behaviors, exposures, toxic exposures, what have you, and the development of cancer. And in this case, breast cancer by region, approximately almost 100 for every 100,000 people. In this case, I believe they're looking at women alone. So 1 out of 1,000 rate for breast cancer in North America, or 100 per 100,000. When you look at China, 18.7 per 100,000, 5 times less the rate. And what's interesting is if a woman from China moved to North America, their rate would come up to 100 per 100,000, meaning that we're not dealing with genetics, we are dealing with the lifestyle differences, the dietary differences in the countries. Similarly, when you look at prostate cancer by country, 100 per 100,000 in the United States, and Canada is very similar. When you look at Japan, it's 8 per 100,000, and in China, it is 2 per 100,000 with regards to prostate cancer. So a 20 to 50 times smaller rate in those countries for prostate cancer. And again, the differences being not genetic, but rather the differences are lifestyle issues and the foods that are being eaten. Same thing goes for heart disease. Same thing goes for other areas when you look at other areas of the world. And the recommendations were, as was the point made in this particular study and at the European Breast Cancer Conference in Barcelona, the recommendations that they came up with where you stay as slim as possible with a BMI, they're saying between 21 to 23, be physically active for at least 30 minutes a day, avoid sugared soft drinks to reduce the minimum consumption of calorie-rich foods, eat generous amounts of variety of fruits, vegetables, legumes, and whole grain foods, reduce your consumption of red meat, which is beef, lamb, and pork, to about 500 grams or about a pound a week, limit daily consumption of alcohol to 2 glasses for men and 1 glass for women if you are someone who drinks, limit consumption of salty, pickled products. Don't use cancer-preventing supplements. Mothers should breastfeed their children for 6 months. And cancer survivors should follow the recommendations given above. And as well, not smoking. Those things, which involve no medications at all, reduce your risk of cancers. In this case, breast cancer and colon cancer and various other ones. That's the message. We have to use this information wisely, because we see good-meaning people out there raising money for cancer research, but the whole idea is trying to prevent the diseases in the process and treat the diseases that you can't prevent. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. We'll be back with your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255. You're listening to Sunday House Call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
580 CFRA Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is brought to you in part by livinghealthychamplain.ca, helping you take control of your health.
Now back to Dr. Barry Dworkin on 580 CFRA's Sunday House Call. The numbers, 521-TALK, 521-8255.
And our lines are slowly filling up, and I encourage you to call now as opposed to later. And we're going to line one and speaking to Mary in Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Well, hi, Doctor. We were talking about claudication there about 3 weeks ago, and we run out of time.
Okay.
We only had about a minute.
Sure.
The doctor had been treating me for neuropathy in both my legs, like the muscles in the back. They were kind of achy and everything. Mm-hmm. And I kind of got fed up because the medication that they were giving me, you know, didn't help at all. So I went and had an MRI, and apparently there is like prominence of several deep veins in each calf, which could be evidence of deep venous dilation varicosities due to valvular insufficiency.
Valvular insufficiency, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have many patients like that?
Yeah, it's a fairly common condition. It doesn't necessarily imply a clinical effect. Well, all it means is that the valves in the veins themselves, the valves that try to ensure that blood flows in one direction, that is from the foot up towards the upwards, sort of against gravity, those valves prevent the blood from flowing backwards as the blood is pumped through. And so if the valves are not working well, which is called valvular insufficiency, you end up with blood flow that, because when you're standing, the weight of the blood, you know, and the acceleration due to gravity just allow the blood flows backwards, goes the opposite way back towards your feet. And as a result, those veins and the walls of the veins are very thin, so they can dilate and they can get wider. But that in itself doesn't necessarily imply neuropathy. It can certainly cause some pain in the legs because depending on the size of the vein and where they're located, especially if they're in the deep parts of the leg, it can cause some pressure and increased pain and achiness in the leg. But yeah, it's not associated with neuropathy, though.
This is just like the muscles in the backs of my legs. Like, you know, it's just like a strain.
Right.
It feels like a strain. And now will this get worse or any better, or what your...
Well, now, do you have other underlying medical conditions?
I have diabetes.
Okay. And you also have pain in the legs. They said you have neuropathy as well, where the nerves, you're not feeling things as well on your feet?
Oh, no, my feet are fine.
Okay, so you can, when they do a test, they sometimes will use it's called a monofilament test. It's simply a little thin wire that they have on the end of a stick, and they touch the skin and to detect whether you can feel that, because it's a very light touch. And if people can feel that, it tells the examiner that the nerves are functioning well on the surface of the meniscus.
I have had that done and everything as well.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
And I've had the nerve conducting test twice, and they're fine.
Okay. So the pain is localized only to the calves, so the back of your legs.
Yeah.
And the whole calf, or just the upper part or lower part?
No, just right from underneath my knee down, like, you know. I can stand it all right, like, you know. But is there any chance of any blood clots going from there up to the heart or that?
Well, it's unlikely. The first thing is that blood clots in the legs, especially what we call deep vein thrombosis, occur very suddenly. They cause the leg to swell up around the entire leg. It becomes very red and hot and quite pronounced. And literally the leg can swell to twice its size when that happens.
Oh,
and the leg gets very tender, it hurts quite a bit, and you really can't walk on it. It really is quite a remarkable change in the appearance of the leg.
Now, these muscles in my leg, will it affect any other muscles in my body?
No, it shouldn't. In fact, what's likely happening is that it's the calf muscle itself that's just sore and not the veins that are causing it.
Okay.
And so it's more, really the treatment for sore muscles is to keep walking, to keep moving. In fact, walking and building up muscle strength encourages proper venous blood flow. That is, it helps improve blood flow in the veins because it squeezes down on the vein and keeps it from dilating as much. So
now, the nurse looks after my feet. She has got me to get the medical elastic stockings.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is only something to be used if your legs get swollen, because if the legs aren't swollen, there's not much that those stockings are going to do.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and the reason is that the stockings are developed. For example, someone who gets, who has what's called vascular insufficiency, or in this case, they have leakage of fluid into the surrounding tissue from the arteries and veins that are down in the lower leg.
Mm-hmm.
The feet will swell up. Sometimes if you take your thumb and you press onto the top of the foot and then you move your thumb away, you see literally a little crater from the swelling that the thumb has put pressure in.
Mm-hmm.
And that is called pitting edema. Edema is swelling. And pitting simply means when you put pressure on it, you leave an indentation. That tells us that there's just a lot of pressure in the foot that's leading to that type of swelling. And so the stocking is worn to put pressure back onto the skin to prevent the fluid from leaking out. But in the absence of that, if you don't have that at all in your feet and there's no swelling in your leg, the stockings aren't going to do very much because they're designed to prevent the swelling. If, on the other hand, you have on the surface of your leg, varicose veins that are quite large. That is, literally, you see these tortuous veins, almost snake-like, running on the surface of the skin, and they're bulging out. They can be painful, and the stockings can help for that as well. But if you don't have that on the surface of your leg, it's very unlikely that those stockings are going to do very much, and in fact, they can be quite uncomfortable to wear if you're not having any swelling in those legs to begin with.
Okay, well, I don't have really swelling, and there's only one leg, and I don't have bulging veins. Mm-hmm. I can see the veins, but they're not bulging.
Okay. So I would say that your best bet is to do things to help encourage the exercise for your lower legs, and in fact, because of the diabetes, you're much better off doing exercise for many reasons. One of them is that as you exercise, your body creates smaller blood vessels. They're called, it's called collateral circulation, so that it improves blood flow to your legs and reduces the risk of neuropathy if you exercise and you're keeping your blood sugars low, and those are, that's being controlled very well. And it's also good for what we call venous return. With regards to clotting, even if there was a clot that occurred in your calf area, the risk of that clot moving upwards, and clots in the veins don't really go into the heart to cause a damage to the heart. They usually will go through the right side of the heart and then head up into the lung, causing what's known as a pulmonary embolus, which can be a serious life-threatening condition. But clots that occur in the calves have only a 5% risk of that occurring, whereas a clot that occurs in the thigh has a 90 to 95% chance of that occurring. So it makes a very big difference where the clot originates.
Oh, okay. So the anyone that you know that has this, they're not wearing these stockings then, eh?
Yeah, usually, as I said, you only recommend the stockings if someone has varicose veins on the surface that are very tender, because then it pushes down on the vein, it prevents them from dilating. Or somebody who has edema, what we call pitting edema, in the lower legs or in the feet that cause pain. The swelling itself makes it hard to put your feet into shoes. The shoes get very tight because of the swelling, and so you wear those stockings. But otherwise, there really isn't much indication to wear them if the pain you're having is only in the back of the calf and it's tender if you squeeze on there. It's likely more muscle and muscle strain as opposed to the veins themselves that are leading to that discomfort.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And well, thank you very, very much, Dr. Dorkin.
Oh, you're very welcome, Mary.
Okay.
All the best. Bye-bye,
bye-bye
now. 521-TALK, 521-8255 is the number to call. And I'm going to line two. And Jennifer in Armprior, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I understand you have a question about rotator cuff injuries.
Yes. I went to my doctor, my family doctor, mm-hmm. in January, beginning of January, and I was complaining to her that it hurt to move my shoulder and, you know, lateral movement. And so she decided at the time it was a rotator cuff injury, mm-hmm. and gave me some exercises to do and said, don't wait too long, you know, come back when mm-hmm. if it doesn't improve. Well, beginning of February, there was no improvement, and it was waking me up at night with the pain. And so I went back, and she sent me for x-rays and to a physiotherapist.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been going to for physiotherapy twice a week, every week since, and doing all the exercises that she's given me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still really no improvement. And I'm just wondering, how long should I expect this to go on?
So this is now is about 8 weeks of physio, 8 weeks of physiotherapy or so, or?
Well, no, about five weeks of physio, but I was doing about 4 weeks of just the exercises that the doctor okay. had given me prior to this.
Was there any injury prior to the shoulder pain?
I had a fall in August.
Right.
And I did definitely hurt my shoulder and elbow at that time, but I didn't experience pain okay. in the shoulder until December.
Okay. Well, Mary, Jennifer, we're going to take a small break because we have to break for the news.
Okay.
But then when we come back, we'll continue on what you can do and some of the other investigations can be done to determine whether it is indeed a rotator cuff tear or some other injury.
Okay.
Okay, so hang on just a sec. We'll come right back to you.
All right.
And we are going to take a break for the news. 521-TALK, 521-8255 is the number to call. Star 580 on Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372. For our listeners outside of the CFRA listening area, although that sounds strange, people are listening on the internet. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, listening to Sunday House Call. We'll be back right after the news.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call, News Talk Radio 580, CFRA.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is brought to you in part by LivingHealthyChamplain.ca, helping you take control of your health.
The advice and recommendations in this program are for general educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional directly before beginning or changing any course of health treatment. Now back to Dr. Barry Dworkin on 580 CFRA Sunday House Call. The numbers, 521-TALK, 521-8255.
And we still have lots of lines available if you want to call in now. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, and 1-800-580-2372 for listeners outside of the 613 calling area. And we're going to go back and continue our conversation with Jennifer from Armprior regarding the shoulder pain that she's having. And so there was, so Jennifer, you're saying there was no specific injury, you didn't fall or grab something as you were falling to prevent the fall in January?
Oh, I didn't fall in January. The fall was in August.
Okay.
That's so, why I'm not sure if it's related.
Right.
I know I did hurt my shoulder and elbow at the time, but I wasn't experiencing any pain through the fall.
Okay.
It wasn't until December.
And now, anything in December, shoveling snow, we didn't have very much.
Well, I did help my son move some furniture.
You did?
Yes.
And that was in December or January?
December.
Okay.
And it was right at the end of December, right after Christmas, that my shoulder started to hurt.
Okay. And so how many days after moving the furniture did you notice that shoulder pain start up?
Ooh, probably 2 or 3.
So 2 or 3 days afterwards.
Yeah.
So that's probably what was happening. And it was pushing the furniture or lifting it?
Lifting.
Okay. Lifting with leaning over and picking things up, or using your knees and bending down and picking it up properly?
Probably leaning over.
Okay. All right. Well, and you said you had an x-ray done.
I had an x-ray done, but I have not heard the results of
okay.
that.
But not an ultrasound?
No.
Okay. In order to diagnose rotator cuff tears, you usually would do an ultrasound.
Okay.
X-rays will only tell you about the bones. Look at the joint spaces, look and see if there's a separated shoulder, those kind of injuries. But
okay.
it really won't tell you much about the rotator cuff. And the ultrasounds are pretty good at finding out if a muscle is actually partially torn or completely torn as a means of making a diagnosis. Because if the ultrasound comes back and shows no tears in the muscle, that's actually very good news, because
mm-hmm.
it means that the damage that you have is likely temporary, and it will take a bit longer to get that muscle back into shape to alleviate the pain that's there. So the ultrasound is a key test to do in order to know what direction things are going to go in.
Now, if there are tears?
Right. If there are tears, then the next step is to say, okay, what is the extent of the tear and which muscle is involved? There are 4 muscles to the rotator cuff. The pain is on the top part of your shoulder?
Well, no, it's on a little on the top, but it's on the outside of my arm
mm-hmm.
and at the back part of the arm, and the pain actually ends up going down into my elbow and then through my forearm too. It not always, but the immediate pain is sort of more on the arm portion rather than the shoulder portion.
Okay. Do you get any numbness in your hands at all?
No.
Okay. So that rules out another possibility. So that's a good thing. If it's in your arm and not in the shoulder...
Well, it's in the shoulder as well, but it's the pain, I seem to
yeah.
feel it more in the arm.
Okay. What I would suggest is, before we can say this is a rotator cuff injury, the ultrasound needs to be done. If it does show a tear, given that you're not having pain at the top part of your shoulder, it seems less likely to be a rotator cuff injury, given that the most common area that gets torn is a muscle called the supraspinatus muscle. It's a muscle that runs along the top of the shoulder and inserts into the top edge of your upper arm. And it's responsible for, if you have your arms at your sides and you start to lift your arm away from your body to the side, it's the first 30 degrees of movement that muscle is responsible for. And then after 30 degrees, as you keep lifting your arm up outwards from the side, the deltoid muscle starts to take over, which is the larger muscle over your shoulder. And so when you do that, if you try that, if you start moving your arm outwards, not front and back, but from your side, and moving it out, almost like flapping wings, that type of movement,
mm-hmm.
when you start to move the arm, at what point do you find that that shoulder area starts to hurt more?
Probably at about a 45 degree angle.
Okay, so when you start moving it to 45 degrees, is not much pain?
No.
So that also tells us that likely you have the deltoid muscle being affected, because that's what muscle is responsible for movements in that degree range.
Okay.
And in which case you may have something called a deltoid tendonitis. Deltoid tendonitis does recover very well. It does take time. And you may find that what may be helpful is seeking help from an athletic therapist. Physiotherapy is good. But athletic therapists can also, they do more of a hands-on regaining function, mobility, and strength in the arm. In this case, the arm, it could be other joints. But they're responsible for people to try to, for example, athletes that need to get back in the game very quickly and to have their muscles stretched and strengthened. They do a lot of work like that. And that you may find as being helpful, given that you have already gone about 4 or 5 weeks of physiotherapy without much improvement. But the ultrasound would be very helpful just to rule out that rotator cuff injury, because that was the original diagnosis given.
Yes.
But nevertheless, from what you're describing, it does sound like you hurt your deltoid muscle as opposed to the muscles associated with the rotator cuff.
Okay, so I should probably go back to my doctor,
right,
and ask her for an ultrasound.
Again, ultrasound of the shoulder and also a referral to an athletic therapist. Now, athletic therapists some insurance companies will cover the cost of an athletic therapist and some insurance companies will not. So it really does depend on that insurance company. But nevertheless, it's money very well spent.
Right. Well, I'd like to get it fixed.
Yeah,
so.
No kidding. Well, I hope that was helpful, Jennifer.
Yes, it was very helpful. Thank you very much, Dr.
Oh, you're very
Dr.
welcome.
Dworkin.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. 521-TALK, 521-8255 is the number to call. And we're going to line 3 and say, hey, in Ottawa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, doctor. Well, I do have pain on my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time when it started, it was on my right-hand side.
Okay.
It was on my shoulder, and it was really, really painful. I wasn't able to sleep.
Okay.
And this was in the beginning of February or so.
Okay.
And then I went to the pharmacy, and the pharmacist said that I should take Aleve.
Okay.
When I have the pain. And I took that one, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then at last 2 weeks ago or so, or three, I had the same pain on my left hand shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And was really, really painful again. It was so tender, I couldn't even touch it, or I couldn't comb my hair or do anything really. I couldn't even lift it.
Okay.
And was so painful again, so finally I took the pill, Aleve, and it was okay.
Okay.
But it's not completely okay with a little bit of pain.
Right.
So I went to, and I see also a little bit of puff on my finger kind of thing, between my finger and wrist.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to my family doctor, and I explained that the pain, what I had from the first one, from the right and then to the left, and the puffiness on my hand. And he thought it must be like a pulling ligament or something.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm going to have ultrasound already for April or so.
Mm-hmm.
But then this week, it started like swelling on my hand from my wrist towards my fingers. And I see on the top of my hand, it's kind of swell.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw that one, I went to the pharmacist again. When I asked him, he said, well, you know what, there is nothing you could do. The only thing is you have to go to your doctor, which I already did.
Right.
So I'm worried now, could it be arthritis, and because the swelling, stuff like that, and when I have it, really, is so painful, there is no way, I wasn't even able to close my finger on the right-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't able to open a jar or a bottle which was already open.
Right.
And, I really don't know what to think of, and on the other hand, would the ultrasound, which is only now for the left shoulder, would show if there is any signs of arthritis?
Well, the ultrasound will demonstrate whether there's any damage to muscle. It won't really show any arthritic changes. X-rays will show if there's an arthritic change.
Mm-hmm.
However, it seems that what you have is likely several things occurring at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The shoulder pain from what you're describing, especially if it feels like the muscle is sore and not the joint, can be some muscle damage in the area. It could be the deltoid muscle. It could be the joint as well, but the ultrasound won't show us that. I'm concerned, actually, that with the fact that when you try to open up jars with your hands, you can't because it hurts too much.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, indicates some form of arthritic change in your hands that needs to be further evaluated. It's troublesome when someone reports that they can't open a jar with their hands. That to me, indicates a concern for arthritic conditions that can do that. And there are certain blood tests that will help detect if there is an arthritic change. In this case, you know, looking at things such as rheumatoid arthritis as being one of the things to think about when someone can't open a jar with their hands. There are some things that need to be done in addition to the ultrasound that you had in order to make sure that we're not dealing with an arthritic condition that can become worse over time. So my recommendations for you would be to see your family doctor, mention that you cannot open jars with your hands, that there's concern for arthritic change in your hands, especially if you're noticing that they are swollen. Are the hands very stiff in the morning when you try to, when you wake up, do you find that it's hard to close your hand up and make a fist?
It's not like every day. It's right. Sometimes, and you know, I work on the computer all day. That's mm-hmm. my worry now, you know, regarding my
right.
job. Sometimes, it's not every morning, but once in a while, depends on the weather, I guess, mm-hmm. again. It's very hard to close my hand.
Right. And I'm concerned about that. I wouldn't pass that off and saying, oh, this is just some arthritis from time to time. I am concerned that you're having difficulty using your hand.
Mm-hmm.
How old are you, by the way?
47.
Yeah, this is not something that should be happening to you at this age. So I would look at this much more seriously. I would see your family doctor and ask for a workup for arthritis, in this case, rheumatoid arthritis. There's simple blood tests that can be done. An x-ray of the hands might be helpful as well to see if there's been any changes to the bones themselves in order to make sure that we're not dealing with something that can become worse over time if not treated. So that would be my recommendation to you, because if the test comes back and shows that there's nothing there, that there's no, you know, the blood tests don't show rheumatoid arthritis, the x-rays show that the hands are fine, at least you know you're not dealing with a disease that can gradually deteriorate the joints of the hand. But we need to know this ahead of time before just saying, oh, let's just see what happens and take some medication to let the pain go away.
Okay. Could it be any other than that, like the pain I'm having, if it's not arthritis, could it be anything else?
Well, from what you're describing, it sounds more like arthritic okay. change, I'd say, because you can't close your hand.
Yes.
And if you're having pain in your hands and it's a bit swollen and you can't open up jars, that is one of the telltale signs of arthritic change in hands, or at least arthritis, because muscles wouldn't do that. So, as I said, I would see your family doctor this week to deal with this, because I wouldn't let this go on for too much longer.
So can I go before the ultrasound then?
Because I would go before the ultrasound, because one is different from the other. Absolutely.
Thank you very much, doctor.
You're very welcome.
Okay, have a
bye-bye
good
now. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we have Dan and Sally waiting on the line. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in just a few minutes.
580 CFRA's Sunday House Call. Your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is brought to you in part by Motion Specialties for all your home health care needs.
Now back to Dr. Barry Dworkin on 580 CFRA's Sunday House Call. The numbers, 521-TALK, 521-8255.
And we're going to line one, and Dan from Renfrew, good afternoon.
Oh, hey, doctor, how are you?
I'm fine, how are you doing?
Well, not bad. I think I was diagnosed with diverticulosis.
Yes.
I went for a CT scan for kidney stones, and they said that I had this, and my doctor didn't get back to me, so I had to call her, and she said, yeah, you've been diagnosed with this.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if there's certain foods I should stay away from, because I'm a bit of a caveman. I love to eat my meat.
Well, diverticulosis is not necessarily a disease process,
or
it's not an infection. Diverticulitis is an infection of that anatomy. But what
okay.
diverticulosis is if you can think of, say you take a flat rubber sheet, a very thin rubber sheet, and you're looking at it from the top, and the sheet is held out in front of you, and you can bring your hand underneath the sheet, and you take your thumb, and you push upwards through the sheet, and you see your thumb through there, right?
Right.
Sort of an outpouching through that sheet. Well, that's what diverticulosis is with the intestine. It's the intestinal wall, instead of being smooth and following a nice tube, it has these outpouchings that sort of stick out.
Okay.
And so what can happen from time to time is that you can get infections in those pouches. If things get caught in there, they're not really sure of the mechanism of why that happens. As someone who has that condition himself, where I've had a flare-up once in a while, there really isn't much that you can do, frankly. Diet really, although they say to have a high-fiber diet, not very much evidence to show that high-fiber diets do much for that, although high-fiber diets are very healthy to have, just in general, for you know, general health.
So should I take the Benefiber? I'm taking Benefiber.
You can. I would prefer if you ate lots of fruits and vegetables, frankly, as opposed to the fiber itself.
Okay.
And I'm actually looking up other treatments here just to see if there is anything else here that can be helpful.
I guess I might have had this for a few years, because I remember like 20 years ago I'd have to make a run for it, and I'd blame it on, you know, the meats that I was eating.
Right. It's not really. It's, you know, they mentioned here for diverticulosis, increasing fibers, but again, fruits and vegetables are more likely to help as opposed to, you know, as opposed to just taking it in a, you know, as a powder or something. And again, seeds and nuts, unproven. You can have seeds and nuts. There really isn't any need to avoid corn, seeds, nuts at all. And this is coming from, this is coming from a website called UpToDate.com. I've mentioned this website many times. And in fact, this particular article on diverticulosis is available to you. If you go to, I don't know if you have a pen or anything in front of you.
Yeah.
But it's simply UpToDate, one word, UpToDate, UpToDate.com, /patients.
Yeah.
And if you go to that, it'll give you the, it'll take you to the patient information portion of this website. And this in the search box, just type in diverticulosis, and there's a huge article here that has a whole background to it, gives you a whole bunch of information, even has the fruits and vegetables listed as which ones are recommended with regards to fiber content, and that'll be very helpful. But in terms of stopping meat, no, there's no reason for you to stop that, although, again, in the earlier part of the show, I mentioned that for red meat and such, you really want to try and limit that anyway to about a pound a week. The reason being is in terms of colon cancer risk, there is a definite link between that and colon cancer risk. But eating chicken and tons of chicken is fine. Fish, turkey, all the stuff is fine. So it's just the red meat to limit it a little bit. But otherwise, for the diverticulosis, the only time to worry, if it flares up, you're going to have pain in the left lower side of your abdomen. It's going to be achy, feverish, just feeling generally unwell. That's the type of thing that can that leads you to have diverticulitis. But other than that, you know, if you're feeling fine, it's just something to know you have and just to be aware of.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
You're very welcome, Dan.
Okay. Have a good day.
Thanks, and enjoy the barbecues.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And we are going to line 4 and speaking to Sally in Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you, Doctor? I love your show.
Oh, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you. I have a question for you.
Yes.
My type of work, I'm self-employed. I spend a lot, like you could say 12, 14 hours a day.
Okay.
I've been feeling now for the past while a lot of a pain or burning pain and behind my right knee.
Okay.
And I've checked it with my physician, and he said he needs to do MRI for my back. I said, my back doesn't hurt. And he said, no, it could be a muscle, because there are times of the, there are times when I got up in the morning to go to work, the first few steps are really, really hard on that right leg.
Okay.
Until I guess the circulation of blood go, then I'm fine. Sitting is my problem. Standing, walking, no problem. But if I sit and my leg, my right leg is not lifted, elevated, or straight forward, you know, it really kills me. What do you think?
And it's only the knee. It's not your back that hurts.
It's not. My back doesn't hurt at all.
Okay. And no tingling in your feet or pins and needle feeling in your feet at all?
No.
Okay. Because I'm not sure why. I'm asking the same question you are as to why an MRI would be ordered for the back when it's the right knee and there's no, you don't feel any electric shocks running from the back down your leg towards your feet?
Oh, not even one.
Okay. Well, And when you're standing, what kind of, first of all, the floor that you're standing on, is it a concrete floor, a hardwood floor?
It's concrete floor, but what I did last year, I bought those thick plastic black ones, what do you call them?
The rubber mats that's absorbed, mats that are soft, yeah.
Yeah, to stand on them, because someone told me it could be the hardwood, the floor, the concrete.
And the shoes that you're wearing, what kind of shoes do you wear?
I wear, like, expensive shoes, like, because of this problem, I went to Feet First.
Okay.
I'm wearing their shoe. I went to, I bought the running shoes, the one I go and I paid like $140 for standing only.
Okay.
Like they're good for standing. I've been taking care of
so
my
shoes. So you've done all the right things to try and prevent pain in that knee. Okay. When you're having that pain, can you actually press on an area and find that it hurts? Or is it something that even if you press, it doesn't make the pain any worse, it's just there?
It doesn't, no. I try to kind of put pressure on it or rub it, and mm-hmm. it doesn't make the pain go away nor worse.
Okay. Are you able?
I said it's kind of burning sensation pain, burning.
It's burning, and it's behind the knee?
Behind the right knee. My knee, nothing wrong with it. I could press on it, I could do whatever.
And you can bend your knee, and it's fine. There's no limitation to bending and straightening your leg. Okay. And when you look at the back of the knee, is there any swelling in there?
No.
No swelling at all?
No.
Because sometimes, if it's in the back of, so the back of the knee, directly behind it or towards the,
When you tie your leg backward?
Yeah.
Right on the thigh behind the knee, right there.
On the thigh behind the knee?
Yes.
Okay. So it's, you know, when you're, I'm just trying to get the anatomy here. So mm-hmm. when you're looking at your knee and you're touching behind, is it in that whole, sort of, if you look at your kneecap and you go right behind the kneecap to the back of the knee, is that the area that hurts?
This is the area, right? And that
right
hole.
Behind there. Okay. So that is called the popliteal fossa. That's the fancy term for it. Some of the things we want to look for in there are whether any of the tendons or ligaments that come down and attach to the bone are stretched or torn. That's uh-huh. one of the things that can cause a burning pain. Another thing to look for, especially behind the knee, is sometimes a cyst that forms. It's called a Baker's cyst. And sometimes that can rupture and cause pain, but that usually gives you pain that starts all of a sudden. But from what you're describing, an MRI of the back is unlikely to help for that particular evaluation. Sometimes an X-ray of the knee, at least to look at the joints, perhaps even an evaluation by a sports medicine physician might be helpful to look at the knee. In fact, that's what I would recommend if you're having difficulties, is there's a sports medicine center right on Maryvale. You don't need a referral. You can go right over there. They're right next.
Right where, sorry?
They're on Maryvale. They're on Clyde, across from where the CGOH building used to be.
Okay.
And they provide an excellent service for sports medicine injuries or joint injuries or joint pain. I'm sorry?
What are they called? What's the name of their facility?
I don't know the name. If you know where they are, right next to Maryvale Imaging, the X-ray place on Clyde.
Yes.
And that's where you can, that's where they are. And, but I can't remember the phone number offhand.
I'll look it up. Thank you.
And that's what I would do, Sally.
To me, that makes more sense than MRI, which they give me an appointment for July.
Right. Well, all the best to you. And I hope this works out for you.
Thank you, honey. Okay. Thank you very much. I love your show again.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. My thanks to Alan Rushen for producing the show. And your calls, always lovely to have them come in. And very stimulating discussion. And we will be back again next week with another edition of Sunday House Call. I'm Barry Dworkin. And indeed, have a great week.